You've tuned in to the most crazy rocking metal podcast on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Metal from the Inside.
Welcome back, or welcome to the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor, and you guys are probably first and foremost wondering where the hell I've been. And we're going to get into that in just a couple of minutes, but first off, I wanted to wish you guys a very happy new year. This is the first Metal from the Inside podcast episode in 2022, so I haven't had a chance to wish you guys a happy new year here on the podcast, so I hope everybody has had a fantastic start to 2022, and I know the last 2 years of life have just been chaotic and crazy, and that in and of itself is a complete understatement, but I have a really good feeling about 2022. I think as the years go on and we're dealing with this pandemic and, you know, what it's done to the world, that, you know, we're going to get better at dealing with it and things are going to get better with each passing year. So just got to stay positive and, you know, have high hopes for the year, despite what the last 2 years have been like. So I hope that everybody has been staying well, been staying safe, and that you just had a wonderful start to the new year. And yes, I know I've had quite an absence here on the podcast since the summer. That was really the last time that I was really consistently uploading, and I had explained it a little bit, or quite a bit, in the last episode that I posted back in November with Kathy and Kelly Rhodes, about kind of where I've been and what I've been up to. And if you follow me on social media, I'll kind of reiterate it a little bit now, but if you follow me on social media, you would know I am currently working for 93.3 WMMR here in Philadelphia, one of the biggest active rock radio stations in the United States. And that has just been such a wonderful experience. And quite honestly, the last couple of months have been just a lot of adjusting to being here, and this is in a way my first kind of big girl job here in the music industry, and so it's been a lot of adjusting to, you know, working here and, you know, just getting acclimated to radio and everything that comes with that. So the last couple of months of 2021 were kind of filled with all of that, but now that I kind of have everything under control in that aspect of my life, I decided that it is 100% time to get back to the Metal from the Inside podcast. This is where I started, and I have no, you know, plans to stop this anytime soon. It is, you know, such a passion of mine to be able to do this. I, you know, money was never the goal here. Fame was never the goal here. You know, nothing like that. No matter how many people listen, or if I don't make a dollar, or, you know, whatever, I just love to do this. So I wanted to come back and start fresh this new year and just come back. So I, you know, hope that you guys aren't too mad at me for the little bit of inconsistency there. But I can 100% say with, you know, full clarity and honesty that new episodes will be returning of the podcast every single Friday. And I have a couple interviews already in the bag that are done, and a bunch that are being planned. So every Friday, I'm really, really just so excited to be returning to doing this. And I'm really, really looking forward to what this year is going to bring. Last year was such an incredible year for the podcast. It really was. The first half of 2021, like I said, before I got this job and, you know, kind of needed to take some time away, was such a year of growth for the podcast. I had so many amazing guests on, and we grew so much, and so many new listeners came in, and it was just incredible. So I'm hoping that we can continue that streak in 2022. And I have some amazing guests, like I mentioned, lined up, and I think that that is 100% going to be a reality. So without further ado, we are officially back, and I'm very excited about this episode, the first episode of 2022. I had actually recorded this interview that you guys are going to listen to today back at the end of December, but because I knew that I kind of wanted to relaunch this in the new year, I held off a a little bit. And yeah, but it's a really great conversation. It is with Mr. Andy Black, or Andy Biersack, of Black Veil Brides. He goes by both, as he mentions in the interview. But yeah, I remember Black Veil Brides when I was in middle school. I ended up telling this story actually in the interview, but my parents had come across one of their videos on back when cable, I think that cable still does this, but I'm not 100% sure. You know, it was kind of before the evolution of YouTube and easily finding music videos there, but Music Choice used to have a video on demand on TV. So you'd be able to go on, you know, your cable box and go to Music Choice and watch videos on your television. And again, this was pre-YouTube app on a smart TV or an Amazon Fire Stick or any of that stuff. So I remember my parents had come across a Black Veil Brides video on the Music Choice video app on the television, and they had come to me and they were like, you know, this band is like a young Motley Crue. And they were 100% correct. That was totally the vibe of Black Veil Brides at that time. And what's really great is that in the interview, you know, I told Andy that story and, you know, we discussed the evolution of the band, because if you are at all familiar with Black Veil Brides now, they're really not that Motley Crue-esque band anymore. They still have a little bit of that style, but they've evolved quite a bit over the last, you know, 10 to 15 years. And yeah, it's really interesting to see their evolution and to see where they're going and what they have coming up. And speaking of what the band has coming up, they released their most recent record back at the end of October titled The Phantom Tomorrow, and they're heading out on a tour in early March with Ice Nine Kills and Motionless in White. They are doing a co-headlining tour, and it looks like it's going to be a really fun show. Motionless in White just toured, or not just, it feels like they just did, but at this point it's over 2 years ago, with Alice Cooper and Hailstorm. I went to a bunch of dates on that show and had seen them, and they were great, and it's going to be a fun time. So Andy and I also talk about the upcoming tour, how that came to be, if they, you know, Black Veil Brides had ever toured with Ice Nine Kills or Motionless in White before, and then we talk about the whole concept of the record, because The Phantom Tomorrow is a concept record, which is a little bit different, again, than anything that Black Veil Brides has ever done. We also talk about how the pandemic influenced the writing of the record, the release of the record, and overall the entirety of the band, you know, over the last 2 years. So it was a really great time getting to chat with Andy, especially, you know, after knowing the band for so many years and following them and, you know, just seeing again how they've evolved. So it was really great to be able to sit down and chat with him about the new record and the upcoming tour. I really think you guys are going to enjoy this one. It is definitely my goal with some of these episodes to not keep the intros super long. I, of course, want to keep you guys updated with things that are going on in the rock world and, you know, with the podcast and all of that jazz. But I don't want to keep you guys hanging too long here because, you know, you want to listen to the interview. You guys want to get right into it. So we're going to kind of keep on that theme as the podcast progresses. As always, you can actually watch this interview over on Metal from the Inside's YouTube channel. You can go to www.youtube.com/metalfromtheinside. Every interview that you hear on the podcast is uploaded on our YouTube channel, so you can go ahead and actually watch the conversations if you're more of a visual person instead of just listening. We're also available on every streaming service, you know, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, you know, whatever, wherever you get your podcasts, we are available. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to you guys hearing this conversation, and I'm really so happy to be back. Thank you guys so much for being so incredibly understanding and, you know, still wanting to listen and be here even with kind of my extended absence at the end of last year. And I do want to mention also very quickly, as I mentioned, I do work at 93.3 WMMR in Philadelphia. And if you were interested in hearing me on the air and listening to some rock and roll with me on the radio, please stay up to date with me on social media. You can find me on Instagram at Sydney Anna Taylor and on Twitter at S Taylor Official. There, I always post when I will be on the air and when you can listen in. The great thing about WMMR is that you can also stream. So even if you are not in the Philadelphia area, you can listen to the station over at WMMR.com. It's a big listen live button, and you can go ahead and click it, and it just streams right through your laptop or phone. We also have the WMMR app as well. So if you want to listen all the time, even when I'm not on, you can go ahead and download the app. But But it's been so great being on the air there, and it's just been such an incredible experience. And I pinch myself every time I am doing a show on the air. It's just, it's incredible. So if you would like to check that out, again, be sure to follow me on social media, and I will, of course, be updating you guys here. But like I said, I'm so happy to be back and so happy to, again, be chatting.
Hey, everybody, Sydney Taylor here. Welcome back to the Metal from the Inside podcast. And joining me, I have a very special guest, Mr. Andy Black, or Mr. Andy Biersack of Black Veil Brides. How you doing today, Andy?
I'm doing great. Any name is fine. I've got so many of them.
I was wondering, I was like, oh gosh, does he prefer Andy Black or Andy Biersack? But I know you go by both. So I'm so happy that you're joining me today here in the podcast. And congratulations, first off, on the new record that came out back at the end of October.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, we're really excited. There's been a really positive response to it so far. So excited to be touring it and getting back out in March. And yeah, it's been a blast.
Yeah, so I know that was the first record in about 3 years. The last one released back in 2018, Veil, that was released a couple years back. When did the process for this new record start? Was it during the pandemic? Was it post-pandemic, before? You know, when did that kind of all start to come together for this new record?
I think we wrote Scarlet Cross on January 6th, 2020.
Okay.
And we did Blackbird and then Fields of Bone, and we were kind of getting in a rhythm. And then our intention was to go on tour for the bulk of 2020. And then we would get back to the record. We'd gotten about what we thought was maybe like, you know, a third of the way through or something in terms of just the writing process. And then we would come back and write more and, you know, kind of figure it out more piecemeal. And then we did one show. We went down to Mexico City and played the first show of the tour and then came back and, you know, you'll never guess what happened. We were then presented with the opportunity to kind of just say, okay, well, then let's just make this record and let's spend the year or however long it's going to be. Back then it was, oh, we might have 3 extra months. And then it was 6 extra months. And now, you know, it kept moving back and back. So it was just an opportunity to really spend time and be very detail oriented on making the record, which is kind of a rare and unique thing. For the most part in your career, after your first record or two, if it succeeds, the expectation is that you'll just keep making more records. So what you're supposed to do between making those records is go on tour. So then your life just becomes tour, make a record, tour that record, then come back, make another record. You have very limited experiences outside of just making albums. And in this instance, we had, not only did we have multiple years where we weren't active as a band, we also had this whole wild experience we were going through just, you know, globally. So it was able to inform the situation a lot more.
Right. I was going to ask, you know, how did that affect the writing and, you know, the lyrics and the songs that you were creating? Because, you know, like so many, it's a time that none of us have ever gone through before. Sure. And I'm sure that, you know, in some way, you know, being even the situation of maybe being quarantined and all that, you know, did that at all affect the way that the record came out or how you were approaching the record at that point?
You know, I think initially we didn't think so because, as I said, we had written so much material prior to this kind of starting. But as things went along, I think it would be impossible to not have some level of what was going on in the world not creep into what you're doing. When your only place that you go is to a studio and you're all wearing masks and gloves all day and then you go back home and like all this stuff that's, you know, it became commonplace, so you get used to it. But those things find a way of sneaking their way into what you're doing. It's just the reality of life. If you're writing about honest, genuine experiences, even if you're trying to siphon them through to the story or narrative perspective, the reality of what life is generally takes over everything else.
And you mentioned that you guys, you know, played a couple shows then. Of course, you finished this record, The Phantom Tomorrow, by the way. I'm not sure if I said the title, Phantom Tomorrow. And that was released at the end of October. And so we've kind of seen the beginning of live shows start to come back, you know, this summer and into the fall. And what was it like for you guys? Because I know that, you know, a lot of artists who released albums during the pandemic, you know, unfortunately weren't able to tour or if they had plans, but, you know, you guys planned it out in a way where you were able to get out there and tour pretty much immediately after the album release. So what was it like for you guys to get on tour and start to play those songs live for the first time?
Truth be told, it was kind of a, I don't want to say an accident, but we kind of ended up in a situation where we were initially going to put the record out in, I believe, May. And ultimately, we were told that it couldn't be done, that the production was so delayed that we wouldn't have been able to get vinyl records made or CDs. The comic book wouldn't have been able to be done. In many cases, the supply chain wouldn't have allowed for us to have merchandise or any of the things that come around the release of a record. It basically would have been a digital-only release. And for this record, with the amount of kind of other stuff that's around it when it comes to the narrative and the concept and everything behind it, it felt like it would have been kind of underselling the record to not release it properly. So we found this out and we said, okay, well, when can we put it out? And it just so happens that we had been committed to this tour within this moment, this co-headline tour that we were going to do. And it just kept getting moved down the road. And so eventually we found out, well, it looks like they're going to want to do it in the fall. Let's, you know, Live Nation, everybody else is saying, let's do it in the fall. So we said, well, we happen to have this release date that we got told they can make the records by then. So why don't we put it out then? And it really became kind of a, you know, a fortunate thing for us, because as weird as it was to be on tour and the restrictions and everything else, and you kind of get used to those things, it really was a very, you know, normal, for lack of a better term, release situation, where we went on tour, we were on tour for about a month, then our record came out, then we did about a month of touring after it, and now we're home for a little bit, and then we're going to go back out. Like, this whole cycle feels like generally every other cycle that we've done for the past 13 years.
That's an interesting perspective. I haven't heard a lot of people look at it that way, mostly just because, you know, it's like, oh, you know, it's, they were kind of banned for a little bit there, you know, no large gatherings. And so it felt like, you know, it was just, it wasn't even, you know, allowed. But yeah, it is really interesting to look at it that way of, you know, we've gone off tour before, we focused on writing before, you know, this is no different of doing that and then coming back to live shows when it's safe. So that's a really interesting way to look at it. I admire
it. It just timing worked out for us that way. You know, yeah, we had already intended on making a record, and we were already basically inactive for several years at that point. So for us, it was more about doing it right. And we just happened to be given, you know, I mean, I hate to say that what has occurred was a positive in any way, but for us, the silver lining was we were allowed to kind of make this record. And then when we were able to tour it, it's about the time that we would have toured it anyway.
Right. I mean, you have to look at the positives, right? I mean, we're given these, this set of cards. So it's like, you got to look at it in any way you can. That
sure. But I mean, the truth of the matter is it's still deeply affecting the touring industry, and you're seeing tours get postponed and shows get canceled on every level every day still. So while we were successful in getting through the tour, we still had, you know, our drummer CC got COVID, and we had to change. We had to start doing acoustic only shows. We had to cancel a few shows, and you know, there was an instance of COVID in this moment's camp, and even on our tour, it wasn't immune, and we were able to get through it. And there's a lot of large scale tours that are just getting outright postponed or canceled. So, it's still a very different world. I think it's just about how we all figure out a way to navigate it.
Going back a little bit to in the middle of the pandemic and there being no shows, I know you guys did a couple, live stream gigs and everything back like in June of 2020, right when kind of everything was we were in the thick of it. Was it weird doing live stream shows for you guys, or was it just, you know, because there's no audience, it's, you know, two is camera, you know, that's broadcasting, or was it kind of just, you know, we went out there, we do the same thing we always do, and it didn't really feel too different?
It's certainly different, but it also is like you treat it differently. I think if I were to go out there thinking it was going to be a regular show, I probably would have been pretty surprised when I came out to just cameras and nobody in there. But when you think of it like, in some ways, like a live music video, well, we've made a million music videos. This wasn't dissimilar. There's multiple cameras. The only difference is instead of playing along to a track, we're actually playing these songs. So, yeah, I mean, I think we had to have a different mindset about it. And we did really enjoy the opportunity to at least get together and perform. And, you know, we were able to see, you know, fans in parts of the world that we have never been able to tour in and maybe someday would never be able to get to. We're able to see our live show in a way that they weren't before. And so, again, you try to find the silver linings in these situations, and that was certainly one.
I want to get back to the Phantom Tomorrow a little bit, and just the overall concept of it, because it is a concept record, which is really interesting and in a way is kind of unlike anything that you guys have done before. Where did this come from? You know, what sparked this? Because like I mentioned, it is a concept record, and it is based off a little bit of it's like a villain origin story, correct?
Yeah.
It's comic book based. So tell us a little bit about how that came to fruition.
Well, you know, I've always loved comic books. I've always loved the idea of hero creation and what creates a hero and what is a hero. And so the idea was to try to kind of build an origin story based not on this kind of good versus evil thing, and more so based on the kind of I suppose the fragility of heroes in general and the idea of building somebody up as being better than you and somehow a source of inspiration and sometimes neglecting your own, personality traits or what makes you heroic or what makes you a good person or good to be around or positive for your family or friends. And so that was really kind of the jumping off point. And then, you know, at the end of the day, all of us who make music, who have been successful enough to be able to have an audience, we are placed with responsibilities that I don't take lightly and none of us do, which is that our music has impacted people in many ways. And they come to us and say, hey, you know, I was going through XYZ in my life and this song got me out of that place. And so with that comes a level of responsibility. So I wanted to be able to talk about that as well. The idea that, you know, I'm certainly not some heroic beacon of virtuosity and perfection, but if something that I've written can be important to you, then use that as a tool. You know, it's not about me being somehow this golden god of rock stardom. It's about how elements of what we have done and many other bands have done informed you, the listener, in some way and helped you. But ultimately, you're the one who is saving yourself in these situations.
And it's so true. You know, I've heard myself being a music fan, and I know that you are too, which I want to get into a little bit later about your history as a fan and how you kind of grew up with music. But, you know, it's so true how much songs can affect you and music can affect you. And, you know, does it kind of just shock you sometimes in a good way of just a kind of like a pinch me moment when people come up to you and say things like that to you, like, you know, your music has helped save my life or help me out of a bad place? You know, does it still, you know, after all these years, you know, kind of affect you in a way?
Certainly, you know, and people will say things that are deeply important to them, their lives, you know, informative moments in their lives that were impacted by a song that, you know, I wrote when I was 19 years old. That's a crazy thing when you see people with tattoos or you see people who, you know, their relationship they met because of their shared fandom of what you made. It's a really humbling thing. And I think it's important for anybody that's put in that position to be able to keep perspective and understand that this is a, you know, this is not a thing that you are owed. This is not a thing that you deserve. It's a thing that you work for, and it's a thing you're very fortunate to have. And to try to be able to communicate that directly with an audience and go, I appreciate what you have given me, and I hope to give you something, I think is kind of the most important part of this.
Like I mentioned, I did want to get into your kind of background as a music fan, because I know you're into a lot of, for lack of a better term, kind of the 80s metal, you know, the Motley Crue's, the Wasps, you know, those are all of my favorite bands too. I primarily interview, like I've had Dee Snider on the podcast, Alice Cooper and everything.
So. Oh, two of the best.
Yes.
Dee is one of my favorite people in the world. He's just wonderful.
He is amazing. I had him on, and Alice is my personal hero, so I've had him on too. And I loved, you know, doing some just research on you and everything, preparing for this. You know, I've also known just following the band, you know, how much you love that kind of music and everything. And I wanted to tell you this too, really quick. When I was first finding your band, and I knew about you, but my parents are really big rock fans. And back when Music Choice was still a big thing on TV.
Sure, the station that you could listen to songs.
Yeah, the station could listen to songs. And it was like the advent before really like a lot of YouTube did it with music videos. I remember my parents telling me, they came to me about it and they said, you know, we came across this band, it's Black Veil Brides, and they have this really great like Motley Crue. They're like a modern day Motley Crue. And I was like, yeah, you know, I've listened to them and my friends listened to them and everything. So did you get that comparison a lot in the early days, or is that kind of a unique one?
Oh, no, certainly. I mean, you know, that's, and in many ways, you know, we were aping a lot of that stuff and enjoying it and having fun with it. You know, I think as you grow, you start to kind of find your own ways of expressing the theatricality, but you know, it was no secret that was a big influence. And then we were lucky enough to get to tour with Motley and get to know Nikki over the years and get to know Alice and, you know, Dee and Sebastian Bach and all these people that were really important to us ended up being in our corner and performing with us and helping get our name out there and stuff. So it was definitely a really important element was being able to try to in some way bring back that spectacle and that show of rock and being a young band in LA when, you know, this was just the kind of tail end of the Sunset Strip kind of being a thing. Now you go down there and it's mostly, all the clubs are gone, really. You know, the Whiskey's still there and the Rainbow's still there, but it's mostly hotels. And but we got in just before that kind of all really faded away, and we kind of became, in some ways, the new kind of the young kids that were kind of bringing it back. And we'd walk down to the Rainbow or whatever, and all these, you know, old school legends would be there, and they would know our name, and they'd be excited that we were around. And, you know, like I said, well, that's Dee Snider, you know, performing on stage with us, or Nikki Sixx sitting me down to give me career advice, or, you know, going to rehearsal and suddenly Sebastian Bach runs into our room while we're performing. There was just this like thing around the band in the early days that a lot of the guys from that era really were excited that we were kind of bringing that stuff back.
How did you at first get into that kind of music? If I remember correctly, you know, your dad was a musician, he was into a lot of that stuff, but how did it kind of get passed on to you to the point where you found yourself really getting deep into it?
Yeah, I mean, it really stems from my dad. You know, as a kid, there was kind of just two things that we always connected on and spent all of our time together doing, which was music, going to concerts, him introducing me to bands, going to music stores, record stores, and sports. And so those two things. And then we would drive to, I played hockey, he would drive me to hockey practice. And on the way, we'd have a mixtape that had, you know, Dio on it or whatever it is. And I would listen to these songs and learn about these bands. And it kind of all went hand in hand. And I'm an only child. And so, you know, I have a really close relationship with both my parents, but so much of my youth was spent just with me and my dad driving to practice or the record store or whatever else, listening to music and learning about these bands. And then he'd get me VHS tapes and I would watch them, and I'd sit and spend hours every day studying the way that Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley answer questions in interviews and stage moves. And I'd dress up every day after school and try to figure out what my costume on stage would be. And it was just a big part of my childhood and something that has really stuck with me through the years.
What was it like for you just as a kid during that time of listening to that music or an early teenager? Because I don't know about you, but I was the same way. And I remember in high school, people would look at me and be like, I said Alice Cooper is my favorite. And they'd be like, who is she? You know, I'd get all these weird sure. looks and, you know, all the stuff of, I have no idea what the hell you're into, but, you know, it's weird.
I wrote about this in my book a little bit, where one of the most distinct things I have from my childhood is, you know, every major city has a Kiss 107 or Kiss 102. They're all of the pop stations on Clear Channel around like the late 90s all became called like Kiss something. So I'd say that my favorite band was Kiss, and the other kids would think I was talking about the top 40 like radio station. And they'd be like, no, like that's a bunch of different artists. What's your favorite band? And it was like a Who's On First bit that would happen with me and the other 8-year-old.
That's funny. Yeah. It's so crazy how, and especially probably at that time too, the early 90s, you know, and the mid 90s when you were growing up, of, you know, it was just when kind of that metal was fading out and grunge was coming sure. in. And then it was, you know, the 80s had a little bit of a revival there at the 90s. And then again, in the early 2000s, you know, of course, when Black Veil Brides was getting their start and everything. So how did that carry, you know, that kind of uniqueness that you saw even just in school and loving that music kind of carry into the creation of the band and what was brought into it from that?
Well, I think you always kind of go for the things you love growing up when you first start. You know, I think that especially when you're very young, like I was when we started the band, the things that were important to me, the things that, as you say, isolated me from other kids, I wanted to be able to find my own version of them and how I could in 2010 or 2009 or whenever be like, hey, this is a version along with the other influences I had, you know, whether they were mostly punk rock bands like the Misfits and Alkaline Trio and AFI, combining that stuff with, you know, the guitar heavy rock of Metallica and Megadeth, with the visuals of bands like Wasp and Alice Cooper and Motley Crue and Kiss. Like, it just seemed like, boy, this would be the best fucking band in the world if I could just make all this stuff. Because for me, I've always said that the goal is always to be in your favorite band. You know, like I know a lot of artists are very deferential to other bands and they feel like it's maybe egotistical to say that your favorite band is the band you're in. But I think if you don't feel that way, then you're not doing it right. Like if what you should strive to is to create something that you've always wanted to have exist in the zeitgeist. And to me, that's what Black Veil Brides is. It's the band that as a little kid, it's like the, you know, what are they all, you see those memes all the time, like what would be the ultimate quarterback or what would be the ultimate thing or whatever. And then they combine a bunch of stuff. To me, this band is as an 8-year-old, if I was drawing out what my favorite band would be, it would be all the stuff that I am now getting to do as an adult for a living.
And what was it about the theatrics? You know, you talk about Kiss, you talk about Wasp, a lot of those bands, and how you brought that into Black Veil Brides. What was it about the theatrics for you that really drew you in and, you know, went, I want to do something like that?
I don't know. It's just some stuff appeals to you where you go, like, that's me. I remember as a little kid seeing Batman and thinking, oh, I want to be Batman. I seeing Sting in the early 90s and late 90s in WCW as with the Crow makeup and everything and being like, oh, I want to be that guy. Different characters and iconography. I mean, there's a reason why I'm a 31-year-old man who just wears tight black clothes and leather jackets every day. Like there was a defined aesthetic that just clicked with me when I was a real little kid. And I just said, like, that's everything I want to be. That's it. I'm going to do that. That's whatever that is. That's going to be me for my whole life.
And it's really interesting too, watching the band evolve over the years. You know, like we mentioned, you guys started out, you know, very, you know, Motley Crue-esque, and it was a lot of makeup and a lot of, you know, stage wear and all that stuff. And you do still, you know, have the makeup going on, and you have, you know, you got on stage and you have kind of the war paint and everything. But it's interesting watching you guys evolve from that to a little bit, you know, of a different version of you guys. Has that just been like just a natural evolution for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the time that as soon as you start feeling like you're a caricature of yourself, it's time to change things. And eventually, from 2009 to 2013, the body paint and the giant hair and all that stuff started to feel less like something we actively wanted to do and more like something that was expected. And it's a lot less fun to go out and do something that's expected. In 2009, doing it, nobody expected it. And it was new to us. So we were experimenting and having fun with different things. So then it's really just all about the pursuit of doing something that entertains you first and foremost. So if you're on tour for 90 days and you're exhausted and you're sitting backstage and the idea of putting head to toe body paint all over yourself makes sense, then do it. That's great. If the inverse is true and you go, you know what, I think maybe tonight I'm not going to do that, then at that point it feels like you've kind of broken free from what the initial vision is. And so you have to alter it and you have to move on. But it also just comes down to, it's fun to change stuff up. It's fun for every record cycle to do something different. And at the end of the day, rock and roll and all this is about having fun and enjoying what you're doing. And getting to draw suits and clothes and outfit ideas and get them made and different makeup things and hair and all, like, that's just fun for me.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's been a really cool evolution seeing that and seeing where you guys have, you know, come from and where you guys have gone and, you know, what might be coming in the future. Something that I've always just been curious about from a perspective of a musician that was in this time and sometimes is often referred to it. Do you find when people say like that, you know, like they're in their like emo phase or like Black Veil Brides was like an emo band, does that bug you personally? I've always just wondered this because some of your fans, I, you know, have also said, you know, like it's my like emo past or it was like, you know, phase of my life. And I've always just wondered if that to you guys, just because it was that era of music, and to me it's rock and roll, you know, but it's just the era and the time that you guys came out and got big. I've always wondered if for you guys it felt like it was a derogatory term.
You know, when I was in high school, it was, because I didn't want anything to do with the kind of shoegazing bands. And it meant a very different thing when I was in high school. I remember thinking, oh, I'm not part of that. Like, I don't listen to those bands. But my image was one that I started to kind of fall into a lot of those, what is now referred to as like scene bands.
Yes, yes.
As I got older and our audience gravitated towards us, and many of whom were interested in those other bands, it became less about, oh, who am I associated with? And more just about, I'm so happy that what we do has found an audience and it resonates with them.
Right.
So, you know, the other thing is, sometimes people have difficulty with the idea that when we first started, I was essentially the same age as most of our audience. I was a teenager and so were a lot of our fans. As we have grown, so has the audience, you know, and many people struggle with, as they get older, retaining interest in things that they had when they were really young. And sometimes people like to be, they like to kind of make fun of their past and go like, oh, when I was a teenager, I liked all this dumb stuff, because it makes them feel maybe more like they're an adult now. And I think that this is also true of people who were in their like early 20s a lot of time, where you're just only slightly removed from your teens, but you feel so different. So it's important to let everybody know you're not a teenager anymore. So you can be very vocal and let everybody know, well, I don't like that stuff I used to like when I was a kid, even though when you were a kid was 3 years ago. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, right. But it's an important, and I think it's a universal part of growing up where there's this kind of ebb and flow where you go, when you're young, you're into this stuff. And then a lot of people, when you get older, you go, I don't like that anymore. That's when I was younger. And then as you get older, you go, oh, I really love that stuff. You know? And I think even for me, there were phases in my life and fandom where when I was really young, I was heavily interested in, we'll go with a different thing, the Cincinnati Bengals football team, right? We had season tickets. I went every game. I loved it. And then around the time that I was like 16, 17, 18, I kind of started to be like, well, I don't, you know, I'm a guy on tour. Like, I don't need to pay attention to that stuff. And then as I got a little bit older, by my mid 20s, I was like full on back into the fandom. And I was like, why did I miss those years? I could have been watching these games and having fun. So I think it's just part of life. It certainly doesn't offend me. I think that if we are lucky enough to be considered, you know, professional figure skater band, like whatever you want to call it, I don't give a shit really about what title it is. If even one person likes what you do and allows you to do it professionally, that's a win. So you can call us whatever you want. And it doesn't bother me if people go, oh, I used to love you when I was younger. Well, you know, fine, great. I'm glad that at some point in your life, the art had an impact on you. Maybe it doesn't anymore, but at least we were there for you in a time. And at least you were there for us to give us a shot.
I'm sure, though, you're also probably starting to see a lot of those people that you just described coming back. And
I mean, it's been really interesting with the tour that we just did. Was the most varied in age, I think, a tour we've ever done, because we've been away for a few years.
Right.
And so you're looking out and seeing older people who are into the classic rock part of it and are really into like the bands that we've discussed, yep, who are there to see Black Veil for that reason. You've got people who are about my age who we were their favorite band when they were younger and they never got to see us in concerts. And now they're finally coming to see the show and they get to sing Knives and Pens with us live and the whole thing. And then there's really young kids who maybe their older sibling had a Black Veil record and that's how they found it. Or they saw a video of me on TikTok or something. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have a TikTok, but apparently I have a presence there. but I those are the types of things where it really, it's fun to look out on an audience and see this like three generations of people for a band that's really only been around for a little over a decade. The changes that have occurred in people's lives and the fact that so many people have stuck with us is made evident by the fact that, you know, this tour that we're doing with Motionless and Einstein Kills, those are two bands that are, we're all from the same era, so to speak.
Right.
And, you know, we're playing the Hollywood Palladium, which is a massive venue in Hollywood. It's sold out in an hour. You know what I mean? Like it's a testament to the fact that there's a staying power to what this is beyond just, oh, that was the thing I liked when I was a teenager.
Yeah. And that must be just so cool. Like you said, to see people, you know, kids that are younger who are going back into that music and are just already, you know, finding it. And I mean, for you to like have somebody, you know, say or see a young kid come up and go, this is my first Black Veil Brides concert, or they're coming there with, you know, their dad or their, you know, because at this point, your original fans are old enough now to have kids, you know. Yeah. And so,
without a doubt, every time we do VIP meet and greets or anything like that, you're seeing such a wide swath of people in terms of age range and interest or introductory point. You know, you'll have people who they discovered us from playing a video game or one of our songs was in it, or, you know, one of our songs being in WWE, or, you know, me being on Nikki Sixx's radio show, you know, like all these different points of emphasis or ways that people found it. It's just fascinating. And it's again, it's a testament to, while the mainstream continues to ignore or pretend that hard rock and this kind of music doesn't exist, the heartbeat of this is just as strong as it's ever been. It just exists on a different plane.
I wanted to talk to you about the tour you mentioned with Motionless and White and Einstein Kills that was just announced, I think, about a week ago. Yeah. How did that come together? Have you played a lot of shows with either of those bands, or did it kind of just all fall together, kind of like you mentioned, because, you know, you are from a lot of, you know, the same era and everything?
Well, you know, us and Motionless toured together about, about almost 12 years ago now. And we had always talked about doing another tour and just schedules never aligned. And we always thought it would be a good thing. And then Einstein Kills is a band that's been around for quite some time. And, you know, we had known each other socially and they've just really just blown up over the last couple of years and are doing such a great job that we felt like, wow, wouldn't it be great to have these three bands that represent different parts of this same kind of scene. You know, our music is, all three bands that make very different music at very different levels of theatricality, but there is a through line to all of it that I think there's a lot of similar fans of each band.
Is there a specific city or spot or venue that you're looking forward to playing again that you haven't played since before the pandemic or even longer than that?
Well, you know, again, when I first moved to LA, I went to see Rob Zombie at the Palladium in Hollywood. And I remember thinking, I want to play here one day. And this will be the first time ever that we'll be playing that show and headlining a show at a venue that, you know, when I was 17, 18 years old, I was going like, oh, I'm going to play here one day. And now to get to do that all these years later for the first time is a really, really huge thing.
It's amazing that you're still checking stuff off, you know, your bucket list, you know, over a decade after the band started like that. You know, that's insane. I can't even imagine.
That's the goal, right? It's not, yeah. You always want to keep checking stuff off the list and not go, yeah. Oh, you're going this way and being the things that you used to do. So yeah. Eventually that comes for us all. So I'm very lucky that at this point we still get to do new stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to, you guys are coming to Philly and I will be there. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the show and seeing you guys. So yeah, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come on and chat.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it. And the Phantom Tomorrow Part 2 will be out hopefully next year. So you guys can look forward to that.
You just finished listening to my conversation with Andy Black, or Andy Biersack, of Black Veil Brides. I really genuinely enjoyed this conversation with Andy, and he was a little bit of a different guest than the guests that I normally have or typically had on the podcast. You know, he is from a newer band, quote unquote, although they've been around for over a decade. They were from a completely different era than a lot of the bands that, or artists that I interview and have had here on Metal From the Inside. So he had just a completely different perspective on the industry. And of course, as we talked about, he is a fan of a lot of those same bands that I love. And from what we discussed, and I'm sure is apparent to all of you as well, is he is very, very self-aware as an artist and as a creator about, you know, his fans and the people who listen to his music and come to see the shows. And, you know, having been a fan himself and, you know, still being a fan of, you know, the artists and the bands that we discussed. He's just very, you know, aware of what it means to be a fan. And, you know, he caters to all of those people who have supported him, whether it's been for years or, you know, only a couple months or, you know, have recently discovered them. And it was really great to see that insight from him and to, you know, hear it from him in this conversation. So I really enjoyed having him on the podcast. And I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this conversation as much as I enjoyed putting it together and being a part of it. If you loved what you heard on this week's episode and are looking to donate to the podcast, the best place to do so is over at www.anchor.fm/metalfromtheinside. Here you can click on the support button and donate either $1, $5, or $10 a month directly to the podcast. And as I've mentioned on every single episode, you know, since I launched this sponsorship feature, every single dollar I receive goes right back into the podcast so I can create and produce even better content for you guys. But no donation is required to listen. The podcast is available for 100% free on every streaming service, from Spotify to Apple Music, Amazon Music, Castbox, Anchor, anywhere that you get your podcasts. And if you would like to donate but also get to rock some killer merch, you can head over to www.season-of-mist.com, type Metal From the Inside in the search bar, and our flame logo tee will appear. And here you can get the Metal From the Inside logo on t-shirts, long sleeves, hoodies, cropped hoodies, women's tees, literally anything that your heart desires. You can purchase the Metal From the Inside logo on and rep the podcast if you so choose. And that is also a great way to donate if you would also like, you know, a little something in return. All of the proceeds from the merch go directly back into the podcast as well. And if you have purchased any Metal From the Inside merchandise in the past, or if you're planning to, be sure to please tag me in a photo of the merch. I would absolutely love to see it. And of course, share it all over the site and on all of our social media pages. So please tag us, tag me, let me know. Thank you so much if you have bought any piece of merchandise or have any plans to. And in general, thank you just so much for listening. Like I mentioned in the introduction, I'm so thankful that you guys have stuck around, you know, through the weird inconsistencies of the last couple of months. But we are back for good. New episodes are returning every single Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And of course, we are available to stream wherever you get your podcasts. So thank you guys so much for tuning into this week's episode. Again, if you'd like to stay up to date with Metal from the Inside, the best place to do so is, of course, our website, www.metalfromtheinside.com. We are also on Instagram at Metal from the Inside, Twitter at MFTI Official, and you can like our official Facebook page. If you would like to stay up to date with me, you can follow me over on Instagram at Sydney Anna Taylor or on Twitter at S Taylor Official. I always love to chat hard rock and heavy metal with you guys, so don't be shy. Reach out to me on there. You can send me a message, tweet me, comment, message me, whatever. I always love to chat with you guys, so that's where you can find me. Next week, we have a fantastic interview with the one and only Philip Schaus of Accept, Ace Frehley's band, Gene Simmons' band, The Talesmen. Philip is an incredible guitar player and bass player as well. We decided to set up an interview together, put together a episode of the podcast, and it was a super fun conversation. And that interview with Philip Schaus is coming at you guys next Friday, January 21st at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Sydney Taylor here. Thank you so much for joining me on the first Metal from the Inside podcast episode of 2022. There is going to be a lot happening this year that you don't want to miss, so stick around. As always, take care of yourselves, be safe, and we'll be back here next week. Rock on.